I wanted to just talk through the history of how empires rule without having to have standing armies all around the world. And I start off with the Holy Roman Empire and describe how essentially at some point the Roman Empire decided leaving standing armies in place wasn't working. And instead they left a church in place that was very much a financial operation. I always say 2,000 years of tax-free returns and diplomatic immunity, supported by a billion members who confess weekly, i.e. the ultimate control file system, and who pay a 10% tithe, is the most economic financial model an empire has ever found. It was followed up, the Holy Roman Empire model was followed up by the British Empire, the Brits and the Europeans, obviously inventing the central bank warfare model, and also the British taking it to a whole global level by controlling the sea lanes. But one thing that happened to the Brits is they came up against the Chinese, and there are historians who believe both the Roman Empire and the British Empire went broke trading with the Chinese. The British fought their way back in with opium, and ever since then, in addition to the sea lanes, narcotics trafficking and sort of the leverage buyout of places has been part of the economic model of running an empire. So that brings us to the Anglo-American alliance, because at the end of the World War II, the Brits really didn't have the natural resources and population or the capacity to field a military for a global empire. And so we see the Anglo-American alliance take place. And it was very much dependent on the central banking warfare model. But the Americans literally took the model to a whole new level by creating a hidden system of finance with gold and other assets. And they also opened their markets. We opened our markets to global narcotics trafficking and built just a juggernaut with the federal credit mechanism, the likes of which the world has ever seen. We also instituted a network of pension and global retirement plans that channeled significant savings into central control. And then finally, the coup de grace was we cut the gold standard in 71. And with that, we created a model that was literally could use debt. It could issue dollar-denominated debt in infinite amount as long as the military was there to police and manage the Bretton Woods system. And we all know the stories of the economic hitmen and the process by which we moved in country after country, trading cheap paper for very dear natural resources and encouraging everyone locally to take out lots of debt so that they could finance our building, construction, engineering, and other products. And the reality is that model was very instrumental in helping increase leverage or debt around the world. And so what you really see emerging is a governance system where debt is simply a mechanism to govern very centrally. And instead of using standing armies, you're using debt and legal contracts. But something has happened in the 80s, starting in the 80s and 90s, and it's really coming to fruition now, which changes the whole planet debt picture. And that is what I call the data beast, something I've written and talked about a lot. But certainly became easier for most people to understand with the Snowden revelations and other NSA whistleblowers like William Binney and Thomas Drake. And essentially what's happened is that technological developments have now made it possible to take the economic hit game and that's been played on nations and move it down on an individual basis. So you're not just doing it against nation states or places, you're doing it on an individual basis, one person, one family, because relational database technology, artificial intelligence will allow you to work and harvest people in a variety of different ways. I'll give an example when we get to the 12 things. And so you literally now have built a system far more powerful than the Holy Roman Church system. It's the ultimate control file system. It's the ultimate mechanism for economic harvest, and it's something that we're all grappling with in our lives, and it's a very important aspect of looking at and understanding debt. We moved into the period of the bailouts. So from in the beginning of the 90s, we begin to rebalance the global economy. As we do that, we take the debt up in the developed world, the G7 world, tremendously. There's an explosion of fraudulent debt issued. We hit the bailouts. And what happens is, essentially, much of that debt gets moved from the financial institutions that engineered the financial coup d'etat into the sovereign governments. So the taxpayers eat the bill, or the central banks eat the bill. But what happens during that is, I'll talk about it when we get to the 12 things you need to know, is debt continues to explode. And I think one of the reasons debt is very much on many people's minds is we keep watching the debt grow and grow, rather than the financial coup and the bailouts changing it. All it did was it shifted it, but the growth continued. And that's part of the reason you're seeing a tremendous blowback around the world. Russia is clearly carrying the load, but you're seeing the BRIC nations saying, you know, wait a minute, we're sick of the entrapment model. We're tired of being harvested. What we all need is to make the pie bigger. If we keep behaving this way, you guys are shrinking the pie. We need to make the pie bigger. And so you're seeing tremendous blowback all around the world. And part of it was, as more and more people started to appreciate and their population started to appreciate the danger of this combination of debt with the digital databases. And so as you see that pushback, what you're seeing is people creating independent information systems, internet systems, independent settlement systems, and then independent vehicles to create financial liquidity, whether it's currency swaps or infrastructure investment banks outside the United States. As you all know, I believe that part of this is that if you look at the speed at which the U.S. was moving to build the global governance and global currency system, I don't think they were going fast enough, and I think they were being a little bit too simplistic about how they were doing it. It was too reliant on force. And so what you're seeing is Mr. Global encouraging the BRICS to build out a plan B, and the competition of the two will be the Hegelian dialectic that helps get things there faster. I should note that after everyone paid their taxes on April 15th, the Americans pushed back with a pledge to try and fast-track the Trans-Pacific Partnership. That's the U.S. trying to bring a lot of people back into the U.S. fold. Now, one of the things I never expected to realize as I was working on this project was to take a hard look at what was happening in education and in healthcare in this country and see where it was really going. Off and on, I've looked at Obamacare and I've started to look at Common Core and what's happening in education. But it was finally in the process of looking at the way debt was being used to entrap people in places and literally get a majority of the population dependent on either government subsidies or dependent on financial lenders in a variety of ways, that I really saw where I think this is all going. Essentially, you're talking about a process where federally mandated reforms are going to make it possible for private corporations to assume a much larger portion of ownership and control of the entire educational system. And what that's going to mean is that we're literally going to see large corporations having, and intelligence agencies having, direct access to children without the intervention of doctors and teachers and parents, in a way that is really frightening and also is going to be very harmful, I believe, to not just the welfare of the children, but also to their educational success. And so we're talking about literally, and we're also talking about taking two of the most important parts of the economy in any county level in America and flipping them out of something that produces a lot of income and activity for individuals into something that is basically controlled by corporations who can engineer all the labor out. So this is going to be very devastating to local economies, I think far more devastating than many begin to understand. So it's a topic that we'll get into more in the Solari report, but I think one of the reasons we've seen enormous financial entrapment happening in America is there's no way you can get Americans to go along with this unless you've got them over a barrel in a number of ways, and financial is clearly one of them. And I don't think it's an accident. I think there's a tremendous one of the strategic goals of getting them financially entrapped is, in fact, asserting this kind of privatization of education and healthcare, which is clearly not in the best interest of families and children. And it's also mandating market for monopolists. It's clear that the people who are looking to do corporate privatization clearly don't believe in market economies, because they're talking about things where taxpayers are mandated to pay, but they have no input into what's being done and how it's being done. So in both of these instances, whether it's moving to re-engineer and control in a very Soviet kind of model at the local level, or trying to do the same kind of bullying globally, you're seeing the U.S. leadership move to entrap its local populations and global populations at the same time. And it will be very interesting to see if that pushback connects. Because right now, I think the U.S. leadership is deeply overextended. And it's not surprising that they've moved to try and cover their flank or sort of close doors in the flank in a couple of ways by doing the deal in Iran and Cuba and some others, and trying to get the Ukraine off the front page, because this is a leadership that's in real trouble. And one of the reasons they're in real trouble is you're starting to see tremendous consciousness about what they're up to and how deeply disturbing it is.